Welcome to the Revenue Throughput Podcast, the show for B2B owners who are hungry for growth, stuck on a plateau, or just want better ways to deal with the everyday challenges of revenue growth. You'll hear from industry experts and fellow boots-on-the-ground business owners who will share their practical and powerful strategies for B2B business success. I'm your host, Jose Palomino, CEO of ValueProp and creator of the Revenue Throughput System. Now on to the show. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Revenue Throughput Podcast. Today's guest is Ray Reich of RevOps Squared. And Ray is going to share insights with us about benchmarking, key performance indicators, and how to leverage the technology that's out there, what's possible today in new ways for you to get not a rearview mirror look, which is your classic financial statements, but to be able to really organize around some key metrics that will drive performance in the areas that you want to improve in. And this is not the world of just major Fortune 500 companies, but as when we talk to Ray, we'll find out how even small companies, even startups, or just a little bit above a startup, can apply these principles to help drive more growth and to make you a healthier company. So let's let Ray in right now. Well, welcome, Ray, to the Revenue Throughput Podcast.
Great to be here, Jose. Thank you.
Well, Ray, just again, providing context for our listeners, who do you serve and what do you do for them?
So at RevOps Squared, our primary purpose is to collect, calculate, and publish benchmarks that allow B2B cloud and SaaS owners and go-to-market operators to understand how their key performance metrics and processes measure up to similar like company cohort groups. This allows them to make decisions not just upon internal performance metrics trends, but also on how they measure up to their competition, because investors, VCs, private equity, and private and public markets evaluate your company value based upon how you measure up against those industry benchmarks.
Hey, pardon the interruption. It'll just be a beat. We want to tell you about something that's really exciting, and it might be very exciting to you if you're the owner, CEO, leader of a B2B company, roughly with $2 to $20 million in revenue, and you feel a little bit stuck. You know what I mean? Sales are a little flat, maybe even declining, challenged. Margins are being squeezed. Sales cycles seem to be lengthening, and lead flow is uncertain. We've designed a program based on over a dozen years of us doing exactly this for many B2B companies. It's called the Competitive Edge Program. And you can learn more about it at valueprop.com/edge. It tells you all about the program. It's a 90-day program, really focused on helping you sharpen your value proposition, aligning your value delivery, making sure your marketing program is doing what it has to do if you're in B2B, which is generate opportunities, and make sure your sales process is tight so that you can convert those opportunities into sales. So with that note, let's get back to another exciting episode of the Revenue Throughput Podcast. So even though, you know, SaaS is a big category of like all kinds of cloud-based software, you would benchmark within a like for like within a given category.
Exactly. And like for like is we segment everything and we create cohorts based upon company size, typically revenue or ARR based in the cloud industry, based upon their average contract value, based upon their target audience, do they sell to the enterprise market or the SMB, their product type, because cybersecurity is very different than CRM, and even their go-to-market motion, are they sales-led or are they product-led? And then lastly is what is your distribution model? Do you have a direct field sales? Do you have an indirect channel approach? Do you have a hybrid approach, et cetera? So we segment all the benchmarks based upon those attributes that are specific to who you are as a company.
So let's just get into the idea of benchmarking, because many of our listeners might be running companies that are not quite as bleeding edge as SaaS companies would be intrinsically, like they're older line industrial companies, they manufacture something. I mean, it's current technology in their field, but it's not what's happening like, you know, web-based delivery and things like that. They actually make things. So I just want to dig in a little bit on the principles of benchmarking. So let's start with a simple one, like why benchmark?
Well, I'll answer that question, Jose, but I also want to provide a foundational element that's critical to effectively using benchmarking. And the foundational is to really be key performance indicator or KPI driven. So you got to lay in a foundation of a company culture in process and infrastructure that allows you to use data metrics to make decisions. And the first thing we had to do was create this maturity model for what is a KPI maturity. And the first is typically early stage, you know, companies $1 million or less, and they're really focused on product market fit, but they need to identify those core KPIs and instrument those. It might be sell cycle time. How long from you initially talk to a potential buyer until they buy? What's your average contract value? What's your customer referenceability? Because if you're smaller, a lot of times customer C wants to know how referenceable is customer A and customer B. And overall, you should measure your customer satisfaction and engagement. So I call that the KPI foundation level. The second is the KPI baseline. This is when you got some minimal viable repeatability, where you're trying to just get some initial scale, go from 1 million to 5 million. And here you want to expand your KPIs that you're measuring. And I talk a lot to the cloud industry. So this would be like, how fast am I growing this year over last year? So what's my average growth year over year? What's the payback period for my customer acquisition costs? Because you need to make some decisions, especially if you're self-funded. You know, how much money can I invest in sales and marketing this year to get this much more new revenue? I call that the CAC payback period. Things like gross margin. One of the ways that you can generate cash to invest and fuel your growth is how much you develop after you take the cost of goods sold out of your revenue. So that's KPI baseline, the second level of maturity. The third is where you're KPI informed, and that's where you expand your KPI framework to not only have those KPIs at a company level, but every department. So if you're fortunate enough to have a manufacturing department or a supply chain, marketing, sales, how do my key performance indicators directly impact those company level performance indicators that we're trying to drive, whether that's growth, profitability, et cetera. So that's what I call KPI informed, where you're starting to use KPIs to make some decisions. And then the last is KPI driven. And this typically is companies that are 20 million up to 50 million or larger that are using the feedback and insights they're getting from these KPIs to actually make investment decisions. My customer acquisition cost is at a point where if I invest another $2 million, I know in a year I'm going to recoup all that so I can take that risk. So that's KPI driven. So those are the four levels of maturity model for KPI. And I haven't talked benchmarks yet. So foundational KPI, KPI baseline, KPI informed, and KPI driven. Now, Jose, would you like me to talk about where benchmarking comes into that maturity model?
I want to ask a quick question though on the KPIs, which I really, I appreciate the stack, right? So this idea of greater level. So you almost can start at the very basic high level, start with something if you haven't done this yet and you keep digging in, right? So, and the reality is most organizations have, they may not think of them as KPIs. They may be thinking of like, what are our objectives for Department X this year? Right. But it's an objective. It's not really a key performance indicator. It's not something that they're actually measuring that way as a type metric. It's more of an intention. So just giving it language of KPI says, okay, there's going to be some, we're actually going to measure and we have a beginning, middle, end. We know where we're heading. But the question is this, if I put these KPIs in place and I go all the way up your stack, all the way up to KPI driven, and I'm always looking to improve everything, what do I care what anyone else does in the world? As long as I'm always trying to get better, why don't I just get better?
It all depends on your starting point, Jose. Let's use customer acquisition cost. Let's say I'm selling a $100,000 average contract value. And last year I had to spend $50,000 of sales and marketing costs to get that customer. And this year I'm spending 47. I'm pretty good, right? And next year I only spend 42. So man, I'm improving 10 to 15% every year. But then I find out that my number one competitor only spends $24. Well, that's probably why they're winning more deals. They're growing faster because they're more efficient in how they acquire customers. So wouldn't it be great to understand how does a company who's similar to me, and it doesn't even need to be a competitor, it can be a similar company, is doing this for 50% less than I am? Because if I'm doing it for 50% less, I can grow faster. My shareholders, and even if my employees are my shareholders, they can benefit more. If I do have investors, they can benefit more. And even if I'm a sole proprietor and I own 100% of the company, I can go from generating $1 million of profit to 2 million. That's goodness, right? So that's why external benchmarking is so critical.
Because you wouldn't know what you, it's kind of like you don't know what you don't know.
I mean, I have a son, my youngest son is getting ready for college, right? We're taking the SATs right now because he wants to go and study computer science at a really good school. Well, he could say, well, Dad, I went from getting C's to B's this year. Aren't I great? And the answer is, yeah, congratulations. But if you want to go to MIT, who cares? You had to go to getting A's, right? Or getting a 1500 plus an SAT. So depending on what, I'll say, swimming pool you're swimming in,
right?
External context and relevancy matters.
Wow. And that, you know, that's tougher for longer term privately held companies to think about, partly because they don't often see the way to even get that insight from their market. Like, because they say my competitors aren't going to tell me what they're spending. So how would I know?
I grew up on a farm in Ohio, right? And what's one of the key KPIs that a farmer needs to know to see if they're going to make money that year or not? It's the yield from their cornfield. Do I get 100 bushels an acre of corn or do I get 50 bushels an acre, right? So you talk to your neighbors, you talk to other farmers. Oh, you get 10 more bushels per acre. How do I actually increase my yield? Well, I use this seed or I use this tilling method, right? So that's a farm. Now in business, often what we do is we reach out to the network that we have, it might be other people in the industry. And we say, wow, you know, are you having a challenge with customer acquisition? Are you having a challenge with customer retention? Well, how do you measure that? How's it going this year? You ask 2, 3, 4 people in your network, right? And that's great, but wouldn't it be wonderful if you could see how 100, 500 other companies that shared some of your attributes, like your industry, your company size, the type of product you had, how much that product costs, and say, how do I benchmark against a much larger population? And that's what we're doing here at RevOps Squared, is trying to let people not just reach out to 4 or 5 of their friends in the industry, but see how they compare against 100, 500, even 1,000 companies that are similar to them.
Right. And in the example you gave, you know, growing up in Ohio and those neighbors, maybe they all have kind of the same received wisdom. But then you realize that somebody else is growing corn in some other part of the world and they're getting, you know, 2x your results. That's at least interesting that you want to find out why. What are they doing differently? That begs the question, what are you doing differently? Because we're working really hard growing this corn. And how are you able to double, the per acreage yield on that?
It's the power of the crowd, Jose. And what if you can somehow tap into the knowledge, the experience of the crowd, you're going to be better served.
Well, you know, it also, Ray, and we'll get into some of the formal things I think that you do to provide the exact picture that you've just described, but just even getting outside your own head or getting outside of just talking to your own team all the time. Like, you know, so I have clients that will go to a major industry trade show and they either are manning the booth, right, where people come by, they give the brochure, they swipe the business card, and nothing ever comes of it, very little comes of it. When there's an opportunity to, if you're smart, you could spend 2 days canvassing. It's not as formal as what you do, but you'd get an idea what's going on in your world, then just stay. But I've seen them, they just stay anchored in the booth because you never know who might stop by. This might be opportunity knocking. So I think just having that mindset that I need to know what other people are doing can be very powerful.
You know, it's interesting. I'm an engineer by schooling, and then I converted into sales a couple of years into my career, and it was financial driven. And I had a boss talked about ABC, A always, B, B, C closing, right? Mm-hmm. That was a sales metaphor. Very quickly in my career, I kind of modified that to ABL, A always, B, B, L learning. Right. Because if I can wake up every day and learn something from someone else over a year, 10 years, 30 years. Hopefully, I may not be smarter than everyone, but I'm going to be well-informed. So I think going out and learning from people every day is a core criteria to success. And Jose, I'll share, I'm very proud that I was brought up for about 10 years in GE and went through their executive management development program. And benchmarking was a hallmark of GE. And an example was, we had a lot of industrial companies, right? We had medical, we had aircraft engines, we had turbines. And we went to Kohler. Now, Kohler manufactured plumbing and toilets, right? What in the hell are we going to learn from GE aircraft engines from Kohler? They were the world's best as far as managing inventory carrying costs. They had found a way to have 12 inventory turns a year on their raw materials, where the industry average was 5. So what we went to learn from Kohler was, how can we decrease the capital we have invested in raw materials and inventory so we can actually invest it in other areas, customer acquisition, marketing. So there's a, I think I learned early on, look for somebody who's really good at a particular process and go and benchmark them, even if they're not in your industry.
Right, because you're looking at it from a process perspective. So you can, so I mean, that's, you have to apply some of your own creativity to make it make sense and judge whether it applies. But in this case, managing raw materials, if you're in a manufacturing, that was kind of a universal. Everybody had to get good at it and better at it. So that was a great lesson to learn, you know, earlier in your career to see that up close and how that works.
Right, Jose. Now, in my industry that I serve primarily, a lot of early stage companies, a lot of VC money. So you have people who haven't been there, done that. So they're always open to learning, right? It's like, well, I want to learn from somebody who took a company from 5 million to 50 million. But if you're in a more traditional, let's say older company that's been around for 10 or 20 years, it's like, I've been doing this for 20 years. I know best, right? Those are the people who will continue to have the same size company 10 years from now, or it'll be lower, right? And COVID really exacerbated this. I don't need any of that digital transformation stuff. Who cares about going online? And not once, if you weren't online, your business died, right?
Right.
Especially restaurants, retailers, other where the brick and mortar presence was critical. I think that's a really good lesson to say, I need to think about where the market's going, not where it's been, to truly make my company relevant and my legacy relevant 5-10 years from now.
So let me, I think that's a great point. And clearly the ABL is really a strong thought, right? That's, I think that's true of healthy organizations because you just don't know what's coming down the pipe. Who, you know, again, I remember exactly where I was right around the middle of March of 2020. And I thought the world looked a certain way. And like a day later, the world looked very different. And it happened, it felt like that, like it was an instant. So, and by the way, those instances happen all the time. They're not, you know, it's not once a century. Maybe that pandemic's once a century, but, you know, we went through the 2007, 2008 recession. We went through 9/11. So it's like every 5-6 years, something, a big whammy happens and you have to be adaptive. Now, just going back a little bit to the point around KPIs, right? And you're gonna segue a little bit into benchmarking as a like how to go about getting some benchmarking. But I'd like to just ask a question around KPIs right before the benchmarking dig in. And it's this: is there a danger in being so KPI focused that you actually become more internally focused than always be learning? In other words, you're just hitting your, you know, like you said, the example you gave of B's and C's aren't going to get you into MIT, right? You know what I mean? It could be a net improvement. Woo, 20% improvement, 30% improvement, but there is a mark. So can you get too wrapped around the axle on KPIs, or is there like a right balance? Can you just have, you know, because I've seen companies that have, that try to do big corporate scorecards in small organizations and it's just too much. And then everyone hates it. Then it falls into disuse. Just what's your experience been there, Ray?
Well, the first thing I would say is don't be a slave to a single metric. To me, that can be a death knell to being a data-driven organization. Mm. So the advice when I work with organizations, and I work with a lot of organizations, kind of in that $1 to $5 million range, you want to create a KPI infrastructure and culture. We start with three. What are the top three measurable objectives that you want the entire company to understand and rally around? So three. Now, what you'll find is there's often interdependencies. Let's say your top three objectives for next year is, I want to grow 10%. I want to increase my gross margin by 5%. And I want every employee to have an employee satisfaction score that's 5% higher than last year. Three very different goals, right? Mm-hmm. Then the first thing I'll say, okay, if those are your three goals, let's make sure that every individual in the organization has measurable objectives that have some type of hopefully direct or causal relationship to those company objectives. If not causal, then at least they correlated. So we go and we set, and we use OKRs, objectives and key results. Mm-hmm. And that's something that was initially made famous by Intel. And then John Doerr, who's a VC in Google, really kind of took it as a way to a framework for objectives and management by objectives. So you take those top three goals we just talked about, and let's say it's revenue growth, right, at 10%. Then you go to the head of each of your department and you say, okay, marketing. Okay, what are your top three objectives, measurable objectives or goals going to be that can impact customer growth? And it might be, well, I want to increase the number of inbound leads that become customers by 20% this year. Or I want to spend 5% less and generate as many leads as we did last year. So we need to be more efficient. And then the head of marketing, let's say they have two people in a marketing organization, go down to the person who does demand generation. You say, okay, what are your objectives that directly are going to impact our goal to drive 20% more leads? Well, I'm going to generate 20% more leads from each demand generation campaign. Or I'm going to go from 8 demand generation campaigns to 5 and generate 500 more leads each. I don't know what it is, Jose, but you see the linkage and alignment of each individual and their department's measurable objectives to this top level. Then as a company, you're only rallying around three measurable objectives, and everybody says my top three objectives that my own performance is being managed to and measured against linked to those company objectives. So that's my recommendation. No more than three, everyone's aligned and linked.
So that means if I, because people have their own hobby horse in their own department, they have their own preference, what they want to do. So you kind of put the acid test question, okay, how does this tie to the level above you's objectives? How does that tie and so on? So you can kind of, when you see it all up on a board, you probably see, okay, that doesn't seem like that has anything to do with that. I need to understand that a little better because it may not be, you know, because otherwise you could have a lot of people doing a lot of intentional work, but not all pulling towards those same directions. And I love the way you described the top three, because those are three that you kind of know when you get there, like growth, margin growth, and I'm sorry, the third one that you mentioned, but those three, employee satisfaction, those are measurable. You'll know if you're getting there and you know that everyone's lined up toward it. So that's, I think that makes a whole lot of sense. And it can simplify that thinking process right there.
Yeah, and everybody feels like they're rowing in the same direction. And we all have issues we've encountered that were kind of biases, and mine is vanity metrics, because we talk about being data driven in today's society. And quite frankly, we have way too much data, and it's even more difficult to make decisions because we're overwhelmed mm-hmm. with the amount of data. So one of the things that I talk about all the time is being very focused on those top three, maybe five metrics that you think are going to achieve your company goals, and only focus on those and not all the rest. Because if you do, you have vanity metrics. I'll give you an example, Jose. Leads, even though I mentioned leads earlier. Okay, I'm going to generate 1,000 more leads this year as a marketing department. Well, if those leads are lower quality, conversion rate from a lead to a qualified opportunity or into a new customer goes down by 30%, who in hell cares that you generated 1,000 more leads?
Right.
That is a vanity metric that says, hey, I'm the head of marketing. I made my goal. Yeah, the rest of you guys didn't. Who cares? I made my goal. So the thing I'll also talk about data is from my kind of mathematical orientation. There's lies, there's damn lies, and there's statistics. So you got to be very cognizant not to just use data to tell the story that makes you look good versus the data actually drives company performance.
Interesting. Yeah, no doubt. And I've seen it time and again, people, I love the phrase vanity metric, where it makes them look good, but it isn't really helping achieve the big thing, because sometimes that big idea hasn't been articulated. So that's why it seems like you start there. Well, Ray, we could go on for a long time. This is a really deep topic, deep well. Thank you so much for stopping by and sharing even these insights with us. And Ray, if somebody listening wanted to know more about you and your work, even if they thought it might have some application to what they're doing, what's the best way for them to get in touch with you or to learn more about what you do for people?
Yeah. So I'm a very active user on LinkedIn, and it's just Ray Reich. So just reach out to Ray Reich on LinkedIn. Our website is called RevOps Squared, so revopsquared.com. And we have a lot of research there about different types of benchmarks, how to use benchmarks, et cetera. And then I invite your listening audience to take a listen to our Metrics That Measure Up podcast. Metrics That Measure Up podcast, I've had it for about a year, so not close to you, Jose. But we actually are interviewing some of the best and brightest founders and CEOs of B2B technology, cloud companies. Example, we've had the leaders of founders or CEOs of LinkedIn, DocuSign, Salesforce, Marketo, Internet Archive. We have some of the best venture capital firms in the industry, Byron Deeter at Bessemer Ventures, Doug Landis. Go ahead and subscribe to our Metrics to Measure Up, and I think you'll get a lot of lessons, not from me, but from people who have applied a lot of metrics, key performance indicators, and benchmarks to achieving their great success.
Ray Reich, you are the man on the benchmarks and the KPIs. I really appreciate you stopping by. Thank you so much. Hey, thanks for listening to another episode of the Revenue Throughput Podcast. If you like this episode and if you like the series, make sure you subscribe below. And also, if you liked it, please do review it. When people are looking for something exciting to listen to, especially the kind of content we're bringing, which is practical insights for B2B companies, this is a place and a free resource that they can take advantage of. Let them know about it with your review. So subscribe, review, enjoy. Thanks again.